You are listening to That's What I Call Marketing with your host, Connor Byrne.
Welcome to That's What I Call Marketing, the podcast where you will hear from the leading lights in the marketing world and listen to their unique insights. Well, don't forget to rate or review this episode and the show wherever you're listening or watching. It really does help us reach and build on this amazing community of engaged marketers. Just and of course, if you are interested in getting involved with That's What I Call Marketing, our sponsorship kit is now available on our website, thatswhatiCallMarketing.com/sponsor. And we're also looking for you to come on board with us around Cannes. We're going to create some amazing content at Cannes. So we're looking for agencies and brands to have a presence with us there. So get in touch today and let's discuss that really exciting opportunity. Well, on to today's episode. In February, Walter Teeger, Chief Creative and Innovation Officer at VML, posted on LinkedIn that he was shutting down his social media platform and instead he was going to use it to amplify the voices of black women that needed a megaphone. Walter commented that historically, black women have consistently been called upon to solve the world's problems. As he said, it wasn't too long ago that leaders and companies called upon and hired many of these women to save their companies by addressing their diversity issues. Now, only a few years later, many of these same leaders and companies seem to have forgotten the very people who helped dig them out of a hole and survive. Walter said, let's talk about it. Let's address the issues. Let's show up and support the same people that fought for you to be hired, promoted and accepted in these rooms. At the time, the message really struck me and I sent Walter a message on LinkedIn and asked if he thought it might be a good idea to talk to some of these women on this podcast. And he said yes, and so we agreed that I would reach out to all the women that were profiled on his LinkedIn, and thankfully some of them agreed to come on the podcast. So across two episodes, I'm going to speak to six incredible women from across the UK and US about diversity, equity and inclusion within the marketing and communications industry. In part one today, I am joined by Effie in London, an AI-driven pure innovator, Leanne from Florida, communications expert with a flair for strategy and social justice, and Ekate from Atlanta, trailblazer striving to level the playing field in agency representation. Their stories and experiences bring to life the reality behind numbers, the essence of true diversity and the struggle for equity in opportunities that extend far beyond just getting a foot in the door. From the critical early exposure to creative careers for black children to surmounting systemic barriers at every professional turn, our discussion sheds kind of horrifying light on the urgent need for actionable solutions. We confront the balance of recruitment, retention and representation and explore how genuine diversification is not just a normal imperative, but a powerful catalyst for innovation and success. Now, unfortunately, during the episode, Leanne had to deal with an emergency on her side as we were recording, so had to drop off. So you will notice that we lose Leanne part the way through. I really hope you find part one of our series as interesting to listen or watch to as I did to record. Today's show will start after a quick word from our sponsors.
Today's show is supported by the Indie List, the leader in providing you with easy access to hundreds of highly experienced marketers quickly and cost effectively. Visit theindielist.ie to speak to the Indie List team today.
Are you facing the maze of global expansion? Diplomat introduces the Diplomacy Model, a cost-effective, innovative approach to navigating the complexities of your brand's presence in international markets. Visit diplomat.agency.
If you would like to reach an engaged community of marketing leaders, get in touch with That's What I Call Marketing to discuss sponsorship opportunities.
Thank you all so much for joining me on That's What I Call Marketing. Really appreciate you joining from different parts of the world. We've got Atlanta, Miami, London, and I'm here in Dublin. So listen, thanks a million. Can we start maybe by brief introductions so our listeners and viewers know who we're talking to? Effie, can I start with you?
Sure. So I'm Effie and I'm based in London. I am the founder of We Are Warriors PR, which is a lifestyle consumer agency, which is powered by AI, and also the founder of Lila Assistant, which is an AI writing and content creation tool, which I founded. My background is actually in-house in sort of media and tech. I was the former director of PR and comms for Hearst. So some brands that you might know, such as Elle, Harper's Bazaar and Cosmopolitan. I was also a BBC journalist and communications director for Bow Media.
Amazing, amazing. Listen, thanks so much for joining. Leanne, are you okay to go next? You know, you're in the sunny Florida and I'm in miserable Dublin here. So over to you, the sunshine.
Yeah, it is very sunny. We had some rain. Ultra Festival got rained out this weekend and then it brightened up. Now we have a bright day. But yeah, I'm in sunny South Florida. My name's Leanne. I've been in the comms field for about 9 years, agency in-house as well as freelancing. And I am a PR generalist, specialist, excellent at strategy, superb at writing. Have me write anything, I'll do it. And I have worked along the gamut of consumer brands, as well as, and I didn't get a chance to mention this last time, as well as social justice and public affairs, you know, purpose comms as well. So for everyone from McDonald's to Russian Standard Vodka, Marriott, Hyatt, you name it, I have done it all. I love the field just because I always wanted to be a journalist, but I'm also extremely good at business. And this gives me an opportunity to merge those both. And I love diversifying the field and getting different perspectives. Mm-hmm. So as a job seeker, who was highlighted by Walter T. Green, I'm hoping my next opportunity gives me just that chance to collaborate with some amazing minds who can do really amazing shit. And we all just do it totally together and be great.
Love it. Love it. Brilliant. Brilliant. And Kate, can you go next? And I hope I'm pronouncing your name correctly.
You are pronouncing it correctly. It's Akate. Hello, everyone. I'm Akate Kern. I'm based in Atlanta, Georgia, and I am the CEO and founder of Tenet Consultancy. We just launched last year in 2023, August of 2023. So I have two business partners. We've been in the field combined for probably over 50 years. I'm 25 of those years. So I'm the OG of the group. And I've been most recently working with some really great brands, specifically in the, and I think we'll probably go into that in the social justice space, and which I'm really proud of. I'm also one of the co-founders of the A Pledge. It's an initiative in Atlanta, Georgia, where we're actually trying to diversify the agency community here in Atlanta. Atlanta, the city of Atlanta is 60% Black. And agency representation in Atlanta is only 10% Black. So we're trying to level the field there. And then recently I launched a podcast called Black and Audacious, where my business partners and I, we talk about all things trending in the comms industry. And also I'm just talking about, you know, some of the missteps that a lot of brands make and how to correct those different challenges that they're facing. So lovely to be here. I'm happy to be here also with Effie and Leanne. And Connor, thank you for inviting us.
Oh, no, it's amazing. And look, we've all mentioned, you know, Walter, and that's how we've come together. And, you know, I talked about it in the introduction and, you know, having this conversation and, you know, you've touched on it there, you know, Kate, that, you know, it's a shocking stat, actually. You know, if the population is 60% Black, but there's only 10% in the agency world represented, you know, that the community. Why is that? Is it not seen as an option as an industry, or like what are the barriers, first of all?
I think some of the things we actually did a survey, and based on the data from the survey is that it's opportunity. Mm. You know, when you think about entry into the comms field, and let's not even start right out of college, because it really starts further back. Thinking about, we have a K-12 program that we're initiative that we have with the A Pledge. And what we found is that children, Black children, don't even know that there are creative opportunities, jobs that are out there. You know, when they're in school, it's always oh, be a doctor, a lawyer, a policeman, an athlete, a rapper. Those are the types of opportunities that are presented to them. And if they don't, you can't be what you can't see. Mm. So if these opportunities aren't presented to you in a way that allows you to see that, hey, I draw. Maybe I could be a graphic designer. Hey, I love photography. I'm a writer. Leanne, you talked about writing. There's so many opportunities that children, Black children, normally don't get presented with. So when they're going through their journey throughout their educational journey, they're not presented with these opportunities. So when it's time for them to decide on a major within university, it's kind of like a little too late. Mm. You know, internships are probably already, you know, given to people who have family members who are in the industry or have friends of family members that are in the industry. And then you're kind of left behind. And then when it's time to go apply for those positions, those jobs in those the creative industry, you're not being sought after because you just don't have the experiences and the resources.
God, I guess. And Leanne, you know, you've kind of followed the path, you know, and you have seen it yourself as an opportunity. Was there anything, you know, I guess through your maybe education that made you think of this as an opportunity for you, kind of this industry?
Yeah, great question. To be quite honest with you, no. And I think that is kind of the issue with diversity within the comms field. Wow. It is not, you know, the industry itself has its hubs. So you have New York, you have LA, you have London, where that type of representation of an actual communications agency exists. In South Florida, we have tons of them, but they've really blown up after I graduated college, after I was seeking work. So there wasn't really as much opportunities to even consider an internship, let alone even know what public relations was if you've never gone to the major hubs. And I think that is one of the biggest challenges with diversity, especially down here. At the time when I was in school, most of the agencies were LATAM based. So even like we have Edelman down here, but Edelman, it was, you know, like it would be like LATAM based. It would be, you know, Ketchum for Latin America, et cetera. Those type of things create barriers on top of you just not knowing anything about these fields. And I do feel like that is one of the biggest challenges that we are kind of trying to overhaul these days, getting the word about PR in general to all communities. Every city, every state, every industry needs comms, from education to AI to social justice. But how many agencies or establishments are actually reaching out to communities where, you know, they are diverse? Do we have hubs in South Carolina, Alabama? Do we have them in, you know, more rural parts of California, like Sonoma? How many of them are actually there, and what kind of communities are they reaching? So I do think that that's one of the bigger challenges that you will face within this industry and gaining that experience in order to have a thriving career.
Yeah, Effie, in London, do you feel is it any different in London, or are you, like, you're nodding there and it sounds like you know, do you agree with a lot of what's being said?
I actually do. And I mean, I think in terms of diversity in London, I mean, London is a really diverse city, right? Compared to some of the rest of the UK. But I think we still have a massive issue. And, you know, there have been lots of different organizations such as the PRCA, CIPR, even PR Week have done various studies. And, you know, I come from a background working in publishing. And actually, it wasn't until there was this massive movement towards DE&I, we actually launched our first diversity initiative within the publishing industry. And I think the publishing industry and the PR industry are very similar. And the research that we found when we worked with our industry body, the PPA, was that there is a massive intersection between social mobility. And the problem is unfortunately for our industries, and I know that the rates are slightly different in America, that actually PR isn't a very well-paid industry as a whole, right? And so because of that, it means that people that are thinking of coming into the industry, if you compare it to other industries, the pay doesn't make sense to them if you have to, on top of that, factor in, say, if you live in a major city like London, the cost of living, you know, rent, travel, etc. And so what's happened is that the publishing industry, the PR industry, the creative industries as a whole, you need to have that sort of money and backing to be able to actually afford to work within the industry. And so I think that's one of the biggest barriers of entry. I think the second problem is that once people come into the industry and there've been a whole raft of schemes, you know, basically trying to attract interns and sort of new entry people, it's the experience once they get into the industry. I think our biggest problem actually is retention. So how are Black people treated within the industry? And also, what does their progression look like? Because honestly, the way that it stands here, you just don't progress at, you know, a similar rate. And you don't, once you get to the senior management, and that's what people want to see. They want to look at a company and have that sort of sense of aspiration that I can, at some point in my career, be a leader. And unfortunately, the representation isn't there at a senior level. And that's a key issue.
You know what? I wanted to just, Effie, you are so correct. You are so correct. One of our movements through the A Pledge is reach, recruit, and retain. And it's really about, you know, so interesting that people, these agencies and brands, they say they have a hard time recruiting. And I live in Atlanta, and we have probably the most HBCUs. I don't know if you all are familiar with HBCUs, but historically Black colleges that are in Atlanta, the Morehouses of the world, the Spelmans of the world, Clark Atlanta. We have great historically Black colleges and here in Atlanta. And it's always the biggest challenge for these brands and agencies, they say, is trying to reach its core demographic of educated, highly competent Black individuals to work at their establishments. And then it's about the recruiting piece. Hey, we want to recruit you. But if you have an internship and it's not paid, or you're paying absolutely nothing, how can people live?
Yeah.
How can you live and get the experience that you really are seeking if the internship is paying, you know, less than the minimum wage? And then retaining. Well, once I'm in the door, how are you treating me? What is my pathway to the next level? What is my pathway to, you know, management or an executive level position when there's not a roadmap that you've, you know, created for me? So those are very, very three core barriers that I think that a lot of agency and brands need to figure out sooner rather than later.
And one of them on their own is enough. Do you know what I mean? Like, having just one of those as a barrier is enough of a barrier for you not to either get in or progress or get to the senior levels. And so it's like, you know, having all that stacked up against people is just, you know, phenomenal. It's and you've touched on it there a bit, but if you mentioned it there in terms of, like, you know, maybe resource background. So, like, if you have the backing and support, maybe from family, that you can afford to take the lower paying internship, then you have, you're overcoming maybe one of those barriers. And then you touch on as well then the next stage of, you know, progression. Do you think, and your experience is really, that there are just the barriers for progression are different for Black female practitioners?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I think one of the things that I've noticed, and I'm not sure if the others will agree with me, is that I found myself in spaces where I am either A, the only Black female face, or the only Black face. And actually, when I joined Bauer Media, I was the Black the first Black female comms director at any broadcaster. And then when I moved to publishing, again, the same thing. And, you know, this was about 7 or 8 years ago. That to me is kind of wild because there is talent out there. But I think the issue is that the opportunities are not there, that once people get through the door, to actually try and keep people within businesses and grow them to a management level. And I almost feel that sometimes a lot of these initiatives feel like it's quite performative and it's a tick box exercise. It's let's meet our quota in attracting talent. But then there's no afterthought in terms of, well, how do we actually retain them and progress them so that they can get to those most senior levels? And I think that that's the key issue. I think people tend to be very much focused on entry level. But then what happens with the sort of media and senior? Because you need people that are sitting at board level to make those important strategic decisions about how we're going to make our business more diverse. And what's really crazy is that there's so much data out there to say that diverse workforces are actually more profitable and more creative and et cetera, et cetera. So the stats are there to make a strong business case, but yet there are still issues with businesses actually doing it. And, you know, I actually think that it's a real shame that I was part of the team at Grazia that brought in the gender pay gap. So we currently know gender pay gap. We have to report it as businesses. The fact that the ethnicity pay gap hasn't been legislated for, again, you know, it's an opt-in thing. Why has that not happened? And I think, you know, until we remove all of those sorts of barriers and until we put sure measures in place, so proper actions in place to attract and retain talent, kind of think we'll be talking about this in 10 years' time. Wow. And that's my frustration.
That's terrifying. Honestly, like to think that, you know, are the wrong people, that might be the wrong way of putting it, but like, is it the wrong people making the decisions? Right. So for example, let's say, you know, I'm writing the policy for more diversity in a place that I am working, made up place, right? That seems like a terribly wrong thing to do, right? Because like we've talked about this, you know, kind of when we were chatting off before going live, was I don't have that experience. I don't have, so the things you've talked about today, you know, isn't an experience I've had. So is it a problem that the wrong people are writing the policies?
Yeah, I would think so. I think so. I mean, I hate to say this, but it is really not the responsibility of Black people to make all of the decisions about how things are being led when it comes to DE&I within an organization. It's a collaborative effort, and it has to be where everyone across all departments, you know, it's always a shame when it's just like DE&I, and this is from my perspective and just from talking to people that I know who are in that space. DE&I executives don't have any power at the end of the day. They have zero power. They report directly, most of them, to the CEO of the company. They probably see the CEO of the company maybe once or twice a year. But if it's not something that is woven throughout every single department and it has measurable actions and results, it's never going to get, the problem is never going to be fixed. So it's so important for people to understand that this is not, and I talk about Black issues because I'm Black, and I can't talk about other areas just because it's not something that, you know, I have experience with, but there are so many societal, you know, there's just a lot of things that are not regulated properly. I'm not sure, you know, what it's like in the UK or in Ireland, but there's so many things that are the systemic racism is something that was America was built on. And if those those building blocks are not broken down. We're never going to have, you know, the same rights and the same pay equity or any of that within any of these organizations. So I think it's just having conversations. It's great. You know, after the murder of George Floyd, people put up the black boxes. Everyone was, you know, gung-ho about making sure that there's, you know, equality across the board for black people. But things have drastically changed here in the U.S. They've actually reverted back. You know, I don't know if you guys were familiar with Fearless Fund organization that, you know, specifically tries to give capital to black women business owners. They're being sued because they give money to black women and they say they're discriminating against other races.
Really?
You know, you have the University of Florida who got rid of their entire DE&I department. You have 14 states right now that are going to rid themselves of their DE&I departments. The U.S. government is trying to get rid of their DE&I department. These are challenges that we're facing day after day, and people really need to, like, really wake up and see that it's, you know, you talk about 10 years. There's so much turmoil that's happening right now, and we are on the receiving end. And if things don't change, there's going to be a lot of, like, reckoning that has to happen across all industries, not just in our industry, that needs to be resolved. So it's a big problem right now, a really big problem.
Effie, go ahead.
Sorry, just to that point, I think most people have seen the headlines. You've got these, like, big major brands and players where suddenly their DE&I leads are leaving, like they're being got rid of. So it's not just a sort of government, you know, for you guys, like your state government or level, it's across the board. And you look at these major brands who, right after George Floyd's murder, you know, they were there and we're progressive, we're doing this, that, and the other, and they've all backpedaled. And that's a huge issue, the fact that they're getting rid of it. But then also my other question would be, well, what have you been doing for the past few years? Because I don't know, or I haven't necessarily seen, there are some instances where, and I can actually say that there are some agencies here in the UK that really have kind of, you know, got ahead leaps and bounds. And Ketchum actually is a really good example of that. And another agency called Manifest. So they really have embraced this and, you know, they have basically put their words into actions. But I think for a lot of other agencies and, you know, brands with in-house teams, there's been a lot of talking, there's been a lot of research, there just hasn't been the action. And so without that action, you know, without sort of, you know, holding yourselves to account, without measuring the data, then how can you actually improve? And that's the issue. It's just, it's almost as though there is no strategy behind it. And we're not the ones that need to set the strategy, because if you have a senior leadership team, I sat on the senior leadership team at Hearst, you set the strategy for the whole business. And so DE&I needs to be woven into that, and it should be the responsibility of every single person on that team to make it work throughout the business.
Yeah, concept. Well, Leanne, I saw you kind of nodding in agreement there when it was said that, you know, it feels like we've gone backwards maybe, and the question of what people are doing, that feels like, is it, you feel the same way, that it's kind of steps were made and it feels like it's gone backwards a bit?
Yeah. And I would say it's gone backward, especially in the past year or two, because so much strides were made in 2020. I'd never seen so many Black faces at many of these agencies, whether large or small in general. But, you know, as someone who's living ground zero for what Ikate mentioned, which is, you know, the DEI rollbacks, the state of Florida with our Governor DeSantis kind of kicked that off. And it was shocking, and people were surprised that this would be happening, that we would have this widespread gubernatorial effort to try reverse, you know, major strides that have been going on in this country for many, many years. As someone who's been living ground zero on this, it's incredibly disappointing. You know, we've always, Florida in general, just always had an issue with race. We've all, you know, we've been the epicenter of systemic racism. Everything from, you know, destroying Black communities and towns and minority communities and towns in general to where we are today with the comms field. Giving people the leverage to sort of challenge Black candidates and Black employees in terms of the work that they do and their competency, which is always the issue. It's a belief that you're not smart enough to be here. You're not capable enough to be here. When in actuality, you're not given the opportunity, and certainly not the same opportunities that everyone else is given. Even when you are hired, you're not supported in the same way. If you make one mistake, it validates what everyone else feels about you anyway. And even if that's not necessarily the message that's being espoused by your superiors or your peers, it's the message that's being felt. So I think, I'm trying to find the nicest way to say this. You know, I love the idea of everyone strategizing. I love the idea of DEI. I think it needs to be DEIA, diversity, equity, and inclusion action. You know, I don't want you to just stay stuck at the level of, because companies do that a lot, right? They come up with these ideas. They say they're going to do, but then we never actually see the manifestation of such. You know, they may cherry pick one or two Black people who align with who they are. You know, they've gone to the same universities they've gone to. They live in the same neighborhoods, or maybe they spoke to them at a HBCU event. That's not the actual diversity that everyone is talking about. How do you attract talent from all different walks of Blackness? Because we're not a monolith. How do you nurture that talent? How do you support that talent? How, more importantly, how do you speak to that talent once you get them in the door? Are you giving them the same account? Are you allowing them space to grow in which you would allow someone who is more familiar to your skin tone and your class? You know, if this girl made the same mistake as a Black girl, would you flip out the same way, or would you support her? The Black woman in the same way you would support this other young lady. And that's really needs to be the real question about where these biases come from and how do we challenge those. I want diversity to continuously be a conversation, but I also want forward movement and push back against government initiatives to roll it back. I hope I made sense.
Yeah, no, 100%. And actually the point you make there is really interesting in, you know, you can, and we've touched on it a bit, but you might recruit, you know, a Black woman into a role, but then you don't give them the key account, you know, so they actually don't have the opportunity to work at that level on the key account. And, you know, so it's you to the points earlier, it's a bit, you can take a box and you can say, well, we have this, but we're not providing that same platform. And one of the things I think that probably, there's lots that shocks me about the conversation we're having, but one of the things is in the industry we are in, marketing communications, it is quite a, I guess, for want of a better word, like a liberal field, in that it's, you know, it's creative, we're trying to connect with people, you know, there's all this human interaction, insight, problem solving. And so what the shock there is, like, how is there a belief probably across the industry that we can do that without real diversity? You know, and true diversity and actually diverse opinions, because if it's all the same people having the same conversations, ultimately all the work's going to be the same, and like we're not going to get to great work. So I don't know, what your thoughts are.
I mean, I'll be honest. Another conversation I was having recently was around, and I don't know if it's the same for you as a agency owner, is that brands will come to, say, Black-founded agencies just to work on diversity projects. And they completely ignore the fact that you have a background, you know, across, you know, maybe it could be tech or whatever, but they only want to reach out to those agencies to do those specific diverse projects and not to work across their account as a whole. And I think that that's deeply flawed. And I think the reason why there's kind of been some movement within the industry, it's not all down to this, but if you look at brands like Fenty, what brands started to see was actually there's more money to be made, right? And so I think a lot of these sort of, you know, diversifying, you know, the people that they bring in and, you know, the type of work that they do was because they actually realized that they were missing out on a customer base, which I get when you're a commercial business, mm-hmm. you need to make money. But I think what's flawed is that what they haven't realized is that every society and anywhere in Europe, you know, it's not just in the UK, it's not just the US.
We'll be right back after these.
Today's show is brought to you by the Indie List CMO Collective. This service from the Indie List provides you with access to a curated range of highly experienced and talented senior marketing specialists. Visit theindielist.ie to find out more. Are you facing the maze of global expansion? Diplomat introduces the Diplomacy Model, a cost-effective, innovative approach to navigating the complexities of your brand's presence in international markets. Visit diplomat.agency.
And so I think a lot of these sort of, you know, diversifying, you know, the people that they bring in and, you know, the type of work that they do was because they actually realized that they were missing out on a customer base, which I get when you're a commercial business, mm-hmm. you need to make money. But I think what's flawed is that what they haven't realized is that every society and anywhere in Europe, you know, it's not just in the UK, it's not just the US, you pretty much look at every society now, it's pretty much diverse. And so not being able to speak to those audiences as a whole, to me, just you know, I can't really comprehend how as a brand, and I can talk, for example, something like the luxury industry, which is what I know, the luxury industry has missed out on the black pound or the black dollar or whatever it is, because they've chosen not to specifically market to it. And I know LVMH bought Fenty, but, you know, they've missed out on all these opportunities over time because they still haven't quite got to the point where they're talking, they feel as though they're talking to the same audience. The audience that they might have been talking to 20, 30 years ago might have looked very different, but it doesn't reflect the society that we live in now. And that's why I think that teams have to be diverse, because when everyone looks the same and it's not reflecting society, that's when you get issues. And you look at all the crisis comms issues and, you know, all of the sort of brands that have been cancelled. It's the fact that they didn't have the diversity within their teams that they were able to make those mistakes, because they didn't know anything different, because they didn't have any other voices to actually give them a different perspective. But it's still happening.
You know, it's so interesting because a motto here in Atlanta is that Atlanta influences everything. You can look on, you know, Black culture influences so much. And I think a lot of people don't realize that. You know, you look at the Super Bowl, all the ads that were created during the Super Bowl, 90% of those ads were created by agencies that had a white male team. Mm-hmm. But if you look at the talent that was being used in a lot of the commercials, the majority of them was Black talent. You know, whether it was athletes or celebrities, whatever the case may be, it's Black talent is always at the forefront. And then you go to all these other brands, you talk about luxury brands, you know, you have the Pharrells of the world who is like now designing, you know, a creative director for various luxury brands right now, leading the forefront, infusing music, you know, Black music. Look at TikTok. You can't even open a TikTok without there being Black music, Black artists being used, even voiceovers from everyday people and influencers. the voiceovers are of Black men and women that are constantly being used. So to have an industry that dismisses, you know, having Black representation, not just like at the entry level, but at the decision-making table, is a disservice to everyone. And that's why all of the mishaps that happen with these brands, they're having to correct themselves and go into crisis mode because there has not Black representation at the decision-making table. So it's very, very interesting that our industry thinking that it's, I think our industry thinks that they're liberal, yeah. But it's not. It's really not.
Yeah. And from the outside looking in, I think people would be like, oh, you know, marketing communications, pure, like it is, you know, it's seen as that. But like when you.
Yeah, you're creative, yeah. And you're open to everything. You're inclusive. And it's really not that type of industry. It's, you know, people think that they know best about a certain demographic of people. I mean, how can you actually create an ad, you know, about a Black woman or a Black male and you don't have representation at the table? And if you do, there's always maybe one, and we're not, you know, monolithic. Yeah. You know, we're all different backgrounds and, you know, different areas of the world, and we're not one size fits all. So if you just have one voice at the table, that voice may be a missed opportunity that it's not going to resonate with the majority. So it's really interesting to think about our industry as being liberal, in actuality, very, very conservative and very, very kind of closed off. And it's kind of a good old boys club.
I completely agree. And, you know, our industry predominantly is female. So the comms industry is predominantly female. However, once you get to the most senior level, the stats completely flip. Mm-hmm. And it's still the case that if you look at these, you know, these big, big global brands, big global agencies, you'll pretty much see white middle-aged males leading those teams and kind of being, you know, the key decision maker across all these multiple brands. And that's an issue because the talent has been within the industry, but it's just not, it's almost as though there's a glass ceiling.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Like, and you've touched on kind of a couple of things as well. One, you talked about the, you know, ethnicity pay gap. Like it just astounds me. Those two words, pay gap, exist. I just like somebody's doing a job. I don't understand how there's a pay gap. I don't, like, it just astounds me that companies have any sort of a pay gap. So like, anyway, I just think that's phenomenal. But you've also said, and Katie, you touched on it there, that the idea that somebody knows best, the people think they know best. I think that is one of the most terrifying things as a human being, that we believe we can ever know best. I pretend to my kids I know best. That's the only situation where, you know, I believe I should pretend to know best. I don't believe there's any other circumstance where I should believe I know best.
Just lived experiences, I think, are sometimes dismissed. You know, if you're thinking about reaching a demographic of people authentically, you know, it's one thing to read a book or watch a television show or something like that. That's someone's interpretation of their experience. But if someone actually have lived experiences, you know, I go back to thinking about, you said Fenty, and I'm thinking about the beauty brand Fenty. There was a purpose behind the development of Fenty. There was, if you look at the beauty industry, especially with, you know, with makeup for Black women, most brands only had, you know, probably 4 to 5 shades that were offered to Black women. And Rihanna, you know, and her partner, business partners, had a great idea. Hey, Black women come in a lot of different shades across the board. Why not create a brand that's going to cater to women and men who actually have different skin tones? And let's make them happy. Let's not make them frustrated when they go into, you know, a makeup counter and feel like, you know, well, I have 1, 2, 3, and maybe I can mix these together. Or, you know what? Maybe I just don't wear makeup at all because there's nothing out there for me. You know, mm-hmm. it was a beautiful moment in beauty history where she actually created something that was for a large group of people who, you know, unfortunately have been kind of, you know, dismissed in the beauty industry for quite a, you know, long time. Now these other beauty brands have jumped on the bandwagon. Now you see more beauty brands coming out with different shades, whether it's, you know, foundation or blush or, you know, eyeshadow, whatever the case may be, or lipstick. But it has to be someone thinking about these, you know, said groups of people and authentically saying, you know what, we actually care about, you know, their well-being. We actually care about, you know, their lifestyle. And it just makes just for a better experience for everyone. Brands, they don't have to get it wrong. You don't have to go into crisis mode because you had a misstep. If you hire the right people and you have the right decision makers at the table, you really don't. To me, it's so there's a simple fix to this issue. And everyone has made it so complicated. It's really very, very simple.
Absolutely. And actually, I think you touched on AI. And I think one of the reasons that I actually wanted to get into AI is because for me, I think it's kind of scary and weird that we have, you know, a lot of these major companies working on what will be and what is the most significant technology of our time. And then you look at like OpenAI with their all white male boards. There's an issue there. Like there's a huge issue. And we still don't know all the sort of capabilities of what AI can do in the future. We do know that it's going to impact humanity. Yeah. We do know that it will impact our workforce. It will be sort of, you know, linked to everything from security to, you know, healthcare, education, etc. And the fact that there's so little representation within that industry, I find really scary. And like the stats here in the UK is that out of VC funding, 98% goes to white male founders and 2% goes to women and 1% goes to people of color and 0.02% goes to black women. So for me, I'm right at the bottom of the pile. How can we ever expect to get sort of diverse technology that speaks to, and that's one of the things that I really wanted to focus on when I built Lila Assistant and I built our technology. I built it to be both accessible and inclusive. And that means everybody. I'm not building it just for Black people. I'm building it for everybody. And I think that's the difference in mindset, just because I feel both as a woman and as a Black person, I have that broader perspective where I want everyone to be included. But sometimes I think when you just have these all white male boards, all they think about is about a stereotypical like audience segment, and they don't mm-hmm. take every other demographic into consideration. And I think that's a real issue. And like with the Fenty example, the only reason why other brands got on the bandwagon and started diversifying when they could have done years ago, you know, the big sort of Estee Lauders and L'Oreal's, et cetera, is because they suddenly realized that there was money to be had. And that's the bottom line.
Absolutely.
But money to be had, but you've made the point, they could have been making this money for decades. Like that's the astounding part. Like, so somebody should be in a lot of trouble in one sense. You're going, you idiots. There was a lot of money to be made. I want to ask you, because, you know, I'd hate, in a way, if anyone's listening to this and kind of going, well, I'm thinking maybe of entering, you know, the industry, but this sounds like everything's stacked against me, you know, as a young Black woman maybe listening today. What advice would you have for someone listening who might be thinking that? And what, you know, I guess, what could you recommend that they might do you know, for themselves, I guess, because, you know, we can't, as you said before, we can't expect them to fix the problem at the leadership level.
I guess for me is diversify your network. I've been very, very fortunate in my career where I've had white males actually have been the biggest champions for me along the way in my career from the very, very beginning. They saw that I was very driven, you know, very professional and really wanted to, you know, present excellence within the organization. So I had a lot of white men along the way to really help me and just lift me up. So I say diversify your network, make sure that you do have various groups of people, you know, supporting you along your career journey. I also think it's important to, you know, join organizations. There's some really great organizations that are out there that actually will help with, you know, continuing education and, you know, just, you know, making sure those organizations are, you know, helping, you know, guide you through your career as well. And then the other thing is to, I live by a motto of no fear. I have no fear going into the only thing someone can tell me is no. And I've been told no over and over again in my lifetime. And so I kind of forge with no fear and just, you know, with faith. So that's kind of been how I've navigated my career. And it's proven to be, you know, a pretty good, you know, formula for me. So that's kind of my advice.
Great advice. Effie, how about you?
I think what you were saying absolutely resonated with me. It's actually really similar. When I look back, I think my biggest champions have been white males who have actually supported and opened the door. And actually, I was speaking to another founder recently, and she said the same. So I don't want it to be kind of all doom and gloom. Mm-hmm. There are people who are out there that will support you. But it's interesting that we've both had that sort of same experience that actually I would have thought that it would have been other females. But actually, for me personally, it's been white males. And I think, you know, one of the things that I would say for anyone who wants to get into this industry, find the right platforms. So LinkedIn, absolutely. If you're not on there, you should be there. You should be growing your profile. You should be looking at, you know, if there's a brand that you want to work with or work for, connect with people that are there. Maybe don't go for the top person. Maybe go for someone who's a couple of stages below them, but engage with them, go to their events, really broaden your network. And also there are lots of kind of industry conferences as well that you can go to, and professional organizations like the PRCA and CIPR. PR Week does events, and I know that there's a barrier to entry because a lot of things are paid for. And actually, there's another really great network. I'm not sure if you've heard of it. It's called We Are Eight, and it's basically the challenger brand to Instagram and Facebook. And I've just joined that, and that's an amazing opportunity. It's basically an app that's all about social empowerment. And it gives back to local communities as well as the environment. And I've actually found some really interesting and like-minded people. I always think that you should find your tribe. And I definitely think that there are spaces where you can find your tribe. So I'm kind of finding my tribe on We Are Eight. But there's lots of other places like LinkedIn, Facebook groups. There's lots of specialist and freelancer or PR and comms groups do that. And then the other thing that I'm a massive advocate for, I mean, I was based in the corporate world. I've been very successful in the corporate world, but taking that brave step and actually thinking, you know what, I'm going to do something for myself and actually create a company or a brand or a business that you want to see out there. And like, you know, I know there are barriers to entry in terms of getting financing, and everything I've done has been self-funded. But I honestly think that we as women, as Black women, we need to kind of take our own future into our own hands. And if we can't do it by ourselves, then find a tribe, find a collective, find a support and join together with someone that shares that sort of similar values and purpose and start our own businesses, because that's the only way that it's going to change.
Well, amazing. What a great place to end today's conversation. Thank you so much. And we did unfortunately lose Leanne part of the way through. I know at the start she did say her two-year-old might call on her, so I'm not sure if that's what happened. But again, you know, Kate, Effie and Leanne, thank you so much for taking the time to join me today and have this amazing conversation. And look, you know, I truly hope it isn't 10 years time that we have to have the same conversation. I hope that, you know, again, like it makes sense. We just need people to, you know, to stop ticking boxes. And as Leanne said, put the A in, you know, action. So
absolutely.
Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.
Well, I hope you enjoyed today's episode. Today's discussion really helped me understand even more the significant barriers Black women face in entering and progressing within the marketing field, and really does address the dire need for real change in diversity, equity and inclusion efforts, not just in marketing industry, but across all sectors. We got to hear firsthand the experiences that reveal the systemic issues persisting in ensuring equal opportunities and fair treatment for everyone. Amidst all of the challenges, there was clearly like a call to action, a reminder of the power of community and the value of forging one's path when faced with obstacles. I really felt the conversation went beyond just identifying problems. It was a positive push for actionable solutions and really called out the role that we all play in fostering an inclusive environment that truly celebrates and leverages diversity. Thanks again to my amazing guests for their invaluable insights. And we will continue this conversation in another couple of weeks when we'll have the second episode in this series. So if you enjoyed today's episode, please do share it. Do like, rate and review. It really helps us continue to reach an engaged community of marketers just like you. So for me, your host, Connor Byrne, until the next episode, thanks for tuning in.
Thanks to The Indie List for sponsoring today's show. Visit theindielist.ie to find out more.
If you would like to reach an engaged community of marketing leaders, get in touch with That's What I Call Marketing to discuss sponsorship opportunities.
Are you facing the maze of global expansion? Diplomat introduces the Diplomacy Model, a cost-effective, innovative approach to navigating the complexities of your brand's presence in international markets. Visit diplomat.agency